Thank you for joining us today on Coronavirus Update here on Gila Members Community Radio, KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, and online at gmcr.org. I'm your host for today, Marcus Hansen, and today on Coronavirus Update, Jamie Newton will be joined by public health consultant Dr. Renee Dupre and environmental scientist Dr. Ken Sexton, and they'll be discussing the myths and realities about coronavirus vaccination, along with the need to maintain the full range of coronavirus safe practices that we've all learned throughout the past year. But first, here is the news. The New Mexico Department of Health on Tuesday announced 1,451 new cases of coronavirus from last week. This is for a total of 195,615 cases, with 22 additional deaths for a total of 4,010 deaths in the state of New Mexico. 121 individuals do remain hospitalized here in the state, which is an increase of 18 from last week. As of Wednesday, 56.6 New Mexicans have received their first dose of the two-shot vaccine for COVID-19, while 38.8% have been fully vaccinated. This is according to the COVID-19 vaccine dashboard from the State Department of Health. Here in Grant County, the Department of Health has reported 14 new COVID cases since last week, which brings us to a total of 1,677 cases. However, no new deaths have been reported here in the county. In the past week, that is, 36 people in Grant County have lost their lives due to COVID-19 since the pandemic began just a year ago. The Department of Health also reports that 54.1% of Grant County residents are partially vaccinated, and 40.2% are fully vaccinated. 58.6% of the county is registered for the vaccine as of Wednesday. The Grant County Public Health Office has announced the availability of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine today, April 21st, between the hours of 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. This will be at the Grant County Public Health Office at 2610 North Silver Street. If you are 16 years of age or older, you can schedule your vaccine appointment online at vaccinenm.org using the special event code. That code is D60V6CE. Again, I'll repeat that, D60VXCE. Just one more time, D60VXCE. That is the special event code to register for today's special Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine clinic that's taking place for those 16 and above at the Grant County Public Health Office. That is April 21st today. If you can't make it today, you can still register for the vaccine online at vaccinenm.org or via phone at 1-855-600-3453. That's 1-855-600-3453. And the town of Silver City is offering a hotline and email address to help Grant County residents register for the vaccine, identify people in our community who are homebound or have difficulty getting out to a vaccination site, and just vaccination help in general. The number to call for that is 575-597-7029, and the email is grantcountynmcares@gmail.com. That number one more time, 575-597-7029, and grantcountynmcares@gmail.com. The Department of Health also announced that all New Mexicans can self-schedule their booster shots without an event code. If users in these groups are asked for an event code, any group that is, I guess, Department of Health encourages users to refresh their browser, which is Control+F5 on most browsers. And on Monday, the State Department of Health announced that vaccinenm.org registrants who are 40 years and older can now schedule their own COVID-19 vaccination appointments. To do so, users simply log into vaccinenm.org using their confirmation code and date of birth, choose your location, and then select from the available appointments in your area. Event codes for New Mexicans 40-plus are no longer required, though they are required for the younger populations. In the event that a user does not immediately find an available appointment, the State Department of Health encourages them just to check back again. Providers are continually updating their appointment schedules. The New Mexico Department of Health announced last week that the Johnson & Johnson COVID vaccine distribution will be paused following the federal CDC and FDA recommendations. These announcements follow reports of 6 rare and severe blood clots out of 6.8 million doses given among women between the ages of 18 and 48 here in the United States. Symptoms did occur within 6 to 13 days after the vaccination. Scheduled J&J events and vaccinations will be paused or shifted to Pfizer or Moderna clinics. People who have received the J&J vaccine who develop severe headache, blurred vision, seizure, abdominal pain, leg pain, or shortness of breath within 3 weeks after vaccination should contact their healthcare provider. Healthcare providers should report adverse effects to the vaccine adverse events reporting system at The website will be available on our at gmcr.org. Please note that these adverse events are extremely rare, less than 1 per million. The state's red to green public health order, in which counties are evaluated over a 2-week period for daily cases and test positivity rates, will be updated today, April 21st. Currently, 19 counties are turquoise, 3 are green, and 11 are yellow. Grant County is in the yellow. Now look at the testing schedule. The Grant County Public Health Office and Hidalgo County Public Health Offices are providing free testing. The Grant County Public Health Office provides testing every Tuesday from 8 to 10 a.m. and then from 2 to 4. And testing is provided in Hidalgo County Public Health Offices every Thursday from 9 to 11 a.m. You can register for either at cvtestreg.nmhealth.org. And if you'd like to find out more ways to get tested, you can visit grantcountycoronavirusupdate.org. Now look at the food pantry schedule. The Members Valley Health Action League Mobile Food Pantry will be taking place today. That's the third Wednesday of the month, April 21st, from noon to 1, and that will be at the Roundup Lodge at 94 Ackland Hill Road. If you'd like to find out more about this event, you can call 575-574-7674. Again, that's 575-574-7674. And also taking place today, April 21st, the Senior Citizens Mobile Food Pantry will be taking place at the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. That's at 3755 North Swan Street in Silver City. This will be going from 10:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. And this is available to any senior in Grant County age 55 and older. And a reminder that daily, the food pantry at the Gospel Mission is open for breakfast Monday through Friday, 9 to 10, and then lunch from Monday through Saturday from noon to 1. They offer other resources such as dry food boxes and emergency food kits. If you would like to call them, you can reach them at 575-388-5071. Again, that's 575-388-5071. Or you can just go to their location at 111 South Texas Street. Again, that's 111 South Texas Street here in Silver City. A reminder that the federal and state income tax filing due dates for individuals for the 2020 tax year will be automatically extended from April 15th to May 17th of this year. Individual taxpayers can also postpone federal income tax payments for the 2020 tax year without penalties and interest, regardless of the amount owed. This postponement applies to individual taxpayers, including individuals who pay self-employment taxes. Penalties, interest, and additions to tax will begin to accrue on any remaining unpaid balances as of May 17, 2021. Individual taxpayers will automatically avoid interest and penalties on the taxes paid by March 17th. Youthline is a 24-hour peer-to-peer helpline for teens to talk through any issues they may be facing, including navigating eating disorders, relationship and family concerns, bullying, sexual identity, depression, self-harm, anxiety, and thoughts of suicide. Just text teen, the number 2 teen to 839-863. Again, that's 839-863. Just text the phrase teen, the number 2 teen, that's 839-863, or call the following number, 1-877-968-8491. Again, that's 1-877-968-8491. LGBTQIA plus kids, teens, and young adults can now contact the Trevor Project for support during a crisis. If you feel suicidal or need a safe place to talk, this is the place to go. You can also chat via their website or by text. The hotline is 24/7. Texting is available Monday through Friday from 3 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. That number is 1-866-488-7386. Again, that's 1-866-488-7386, or text START to 678. Yes, that's text START to 678-678. The National Child Traumatic Stress Network has created a resource to help families manage the challenges associated with the current coronavirus outbreak. This includes age-appropriate tips for helping children cope with stress and the uncertainty of this time. That website is nctsn.org. Again, that's nctsn.org. And if you missed any of the numbers or websites or resources and would like to find out more, you can always go to our website. That's grantcountycoronavirusupdate.org. And after this show airs, this segment, along with the interviews and other resources, will be made available at gmcr.org. And now we turn to Jamie Newton, who is joined by public health consultant Dr. Renee Dupre and environmental scientist Dr. Ken Sexton to discuss the myths and realities about coronavirus vaccinations, along with the need to maintain a full range of coronavirus-safe practices that we've all learned throughout the past year of this pandemic.
This is the Coronavirus Update interview of April 21st, 2021. on Gila Mimbres Community Radio and KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico. I'm Jamie Newton, your host for today. I'm happy to welcome back two of our local experts who have helped our community understand COVID-19 and respond effectively to its direct and collateral impacts throughout the past year and more of the coronavirus pandemic. Dr. Rene Dupre is a public health consultant, researcher, and teacher. Dr. Ken Sexton is an environmental scientist and aerosol specialist who moved to Silver City a few years ago after retiring from the University of North Carolina's School of Public Health. Dr. Dupre, Dr. Sexton, welcome back to Coronavirus Update.
It's great to be back.
It's good to be back. Thanks.
You two were instrumental in planning and guiding the Grant County Emerging Infectious Diseases Task Force. That's a network of more than 100 professionals, managers, elected officials, and public servants, and activists in healthcare, business, education, and community services, cooperating to support survival and recovery from the coronavirus pandemic in our region. You've worked to empower and protect people in our region from COVID-19 since the outset. That's a very rich experience. Please help us understand the present situation. Foreshadow, as best you can, what looks likely in the near future, and put this in the context of the year we've come through. Dr. Dupre, would you begin, please?
Sure. Well, we are actually at a really promising point in the pandemic. As you know, we've got a couple of great vaccines, which I think we can talk about more later. But we are starting to see things decrease in our county. And so we're doing really well. However, it's not over. And we still have we're at tremendous risk because we still have an appreciable spread of coronavirus in our community. So it's not over. We also have a few other things that we need to start thinking about, which is the secondary impact of COVID-19 on our community are real, and they continue to be real. We've got behavioral health issues. We've got to be thinking about how do we support the people who have had COVID-19 and have now developed long-term symptoms or other problems as a result of it. You'll hear them referred to in the news media as long haulers. Those are a couple of the things that I often go to bed worrying about and thinking about right now is not only stopping COVID itself, but also addressing all of the ways that it really has disrupted our society from top to bottom.
So we started with a long period of time where we had very, very few new cases and no deaths, few deaths. I remember a year ago, we had 15 cases for a very long time. Then we had an acceleration. Now we've gone to a lull. Worldwide and in many parts of the United States, there are new surges going on. Do we face that in New Mexico and here in Grant County, do you think, Dr. Dupre?
Absolutely. When we look at what's going on in Michigan, which is my home state, by the way, when we look at what's going on in countries like India and even in Europe, we can see that we are not protected in the way that we might think we are. Yes, we're rural, but we've got a tremendous dependence on tourism in our community. People are coming and going. And, you know, the coronavirus 19 virus likes to hop a ride. It does not need a passport to pass international borders, and it moves quickly around. So absolutely, I think what we're going to be seeing is something similar to what we saw last year, where we would see, basically, if you looked at a map, places were lighting up. So, and then we'd see a surge and then it would decrease and light up, decrease. Now we can, with judicious use of the tools we now have available, which include testing, vaccines, quarantine and isolation, because we know so much more than we did a year ago, we can mitigate that and stop that and make that peak much less and reduce the impact here in Grant County. So, but if we don't do anything and if we just try to reopen quickly, go back to normal, we are going to see another significant spike.
Dr. Sexton, you've been following closely the infectious new variants, and we see their impacts in a lot of places around the world. France is now locked down. There are areas of Brazil, which is raging with new infections, where it was thought that people had herd immunity because many of them had already been infected. So talk to us, please, about how prevalent the more infectious new variants are now in the United States and perhaps even in New Mexico, and how that affects the prospect we have of potentially enjoying a return to something like what we used to know as normal life.
Yeah, the big news, I think, both nationally and here in New Mexico, is what they've been calling the UK variant is now the prominent variant in this country, in every state, including New Mexico. So that's the most prominent virus in New Mexico, the UK B117. And what makes it of concern is that it's more transmissible, somewhere between 65% and 75% more infectious in terms of. So we used to talk about a 15-minute conversation with somebody who was infected could get you infected if you were close enough. At that same distance, now it only takes 9 minutes of that conversation with the same infected person, but infected with this new variant. So that's a big concern. The good news is that the current vaccine is equally effective against the UK variant as it is against the original one that we were fighting against all this last year. The other concern, the other major variant that's just behind the UK variant in terms of prominence in this state is what they call the California variant. There's actually two, but they make up, roughly a quarter of all the viruses that are identified in our samples that we're currently taking and conducting genomic sequencing. That's how they determine which variants are present. And the California variant, they're still studying it. The vaccine seems to have some protection against it, but they're afraid that it's not quite as effective in protection. So what this means to New Mexicans is that not only do we need to get vaccinated as soon as possible, slow down the mutation rates. This will slow down the appearance of new variants and, offer us all protection. And this will get us back to, the new normal sooner. But in the meantime, we have to continue all the other techniques that we've learned over the last year, wearing masks, avoiding crowds, avoiding unnecessary travel. That's going to be equally important until we get a certain percentage of our population vaccinated to get the numbers down. One of the last things I'll mention is that it's really important to continue to wear the mask after you're vaccinated. And one of the reasons, there's several, but one of the reasons is new variants are always coming into this area. We're currently tracking about 20 variants. We've only identified three as variants of concern, but that means that at any time, another variant of concern can appear, and we never know when it's going to happen. And people that think they're vaccinated, well, they know they're vaccinated, but think they're protected, they can transmit that new variant and get others infected and continue this cycle of surge and recovery and surge and just stretch out this process that everybody's getting tired of.
So this comprehensive approach that we've been urged to take throughout the course of the pandemic remains important. And we'll return to that near the end of the program here so that people have it in mind as we leave the program. The take-home point, it seems to me, about vaccination is not that it makes us invulnerable, but it reduces the likelihood that we will be infected. It means that if we are infected, our bodies will be able to defend us better against the virus. But for us collectively as a people, it also means that as more of us are vaccinated, we are denying the virus a safe place to take root and mutate to something that can be more problematic. So let's look at the status and progress of vaccination here. scientists and public health officials are now urging everyone who's 16 and older to be vaccinated just as quickly as possible. And we do have enough vaccine doses to accomplish that. So either one of you who would like to speak to this, Dr. Sexton or Dr. Dupre, how is our progress here in New Mexico and nationally? And I'd like you also to say how we might be affected by pandemic dynamics in the rest of the world. As Dr. Dupre said a moment ago, the virus is a hitchhiker and not a respecter of borders. Status and progress of vaccination?
Well, I'll jump in with some basic numbers. Of the eligible people in Grant County, there's roughly 23,000. 40% have been fully vaccinated. That's over 9,000 people. That's really good, but there's a total of 27,000 plus. So really, that translates to roughly 33%, or one in third of the Grant County has been fully vaccinated. There's still a lot of people that have to be vaccinated. Over, from my most recent numbers, over 55% of the county have not received their first shot. That's including all people. So we still got a ways to go, and I'm glad to hear that the ability to vaccinate is increasing, the rate's increasing, and there's going to be more doses ever increasing in our supply.
Dr. Dupre, let's turn to vaccine hesitancy. That is, people who are reluctant for any of a number of reasons to be vaccinated. That includes safety concerns. There are also deterrents that are due to misinformation about vaccines. For example, there is a widespread false belief that if people who have not yet had all of the family members they would like to get vaccinated, they may become infertile. And the reality is that the vaccines do not make people sterile, but getting sick with the coronavirus can. Tell us about some of the other reasons for vaccine hesitancy. And I know you've specialized in penetrating the myths that can stop people from protecting themselves and others with vaccination. And what do you recommend to listeners who haven't been vaccinated? Please conclude with that. What should they do right now, tomorrow, Wednesday, when the interview will be heard and vaccinations will be available right here in Silver City in Grant County?
Well, I think there's a couple of things around vaccine hesitancy, and I'd like to start by addressing the thing that made the biggest news last week, and I think really does have some implications. First of all, I want to say we have, and we know we have two really, really amazingly good vaccines. The protection we're getting from the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines is almost unheard of. These two vaccines are, they're wonderful vaccines. We're getting about 95% immunity. They're even protecting against, we know, the UK variant, the B117 variant that Dr. Sexton was speaking about. They are, and they're just amazing feats of technology. And that's exactly where we start to get into trouble. But I'll move there in a second. But the big thing on everybody's mind has been the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. As made huge headlines, everybody reported on it. The FDA said, well, we've had some incidences of basically blood clotting in the brain, a very rare mechanism of blood clot after people got the vaccine. And we're talking, I think there were 8 identified cases at that point out of, you know, millions, you know, vaccines. I'm not sure how many of the Johnson & Johnson itself have been administered, but just that one vaccine, which operates by a different mechanism, completely different mechanism than the Pfizer or the Moderna vaccine. So they're not related. This is Johnson & Johnson is closer to the AstraZeneca vaccine, where they've also seen some issues with blood clots in the UK. So guess what? Our regulatory system regulations, right, are actually protections put in place for us, said, whoa, we've had these reports of these bad outcomes after someone got this vaccine, and they shut it down. So until they can investigate the true safety record, find out whether indeed these events were caused by the vaccine. And I think that that should make people really feel good that we're in the middle of this pandemic. We've gotten these vaccines really, I mean, I'm not going to say they were rushed to market, but they were developed very quickly for a vaccine. And the second we see any indication that there might be a safety issue with one of the vaccines, we're shutting it down and we're saying, let's stop, hit a pause until we can determine whether we can actually use that. So I'm hoping that, you know, and the reality is, I can't quote the numbers right now. Dr. Sexton is the numbers guy. But the risk of getting a blood clot of thrombosis of similar severity, if you take birth control medications, is approximately 5,000 times what we're seeing with the vaccine at this moment, just to put that in perspective. But just because of that, they have shut it down. And I think it's a really, really good and smart move.
So regulators are being very careful. And if I'm correct, we are broadcasting this interview about 3 weeks into April. And the commitment of the CDC is to have a verdict about this by the end of April. Is that not right?
That is my understanding. So that is a real, this is why we have regulatory agencies that are monitoring this closely, so that we do know that, you know, obviously we want the vaccine to be saving people's lives, not harming people. And it is definitely already, even the Johnson & Johnson, it has already saved many, many, many more lives than it has harmed. So if indeed it is that.
Is there more you can tell us about prominent instances or elements of misinformation that could wrongly stop people from protecting themselves by getting vaccinated? And I'd like you also, if you will, please, to speak about the concept of strategic vaccination, that is, targeting the distribution of vaccines in ways that will have the most impact on slowing the pandemic.
Absolutely. So the misinformation piece is not only about vaccines, but vaccines seem to be the big target of many purposeful misinformation and, I should say, disinformation campaigns. The problem with a lot of these things is there might be some kernel of half-truth somewhere. For instance, one of the popular ones is with the Pfizer and Moderna, which are called mRNA vaccines, because they basically act like a recipe for your cells. You get the injection, and if the vaccine has a little code that tells your cells how to build the spike protein or the antigen to the spike protein on the coronavirus that causes so much trouble. And then the vaccine goes away. It's not in your body any longer. It shows your cells how to do it. It's a recipe. But because it has that, those terms RNA in it, there've been a lot of things, you know, for instance, oh, it's going to change your DNA. There's a mythology to it. And one of the big ones was that, Bill Gates was going to implant a microchip with every vaccine. And that came about because during some presentation, Bill Gates said that he would like to find a way to digitally track who's received a vaccine. Basically meaning that just like you have digital information on your driver's license, there would be some way to monitor, to find out, okay, so you've gotten the vaccine or not. Well, we're doing that anyway. We have a system in New Mexico called the New Mexico, I can't remember, the NIMSIS is what we call it, but it's where we register all vaccines, whether you got a vaccine for flu or for your kid got a measles vaccine, it's entered in that. So we are already digitally tracking vaccines. So that turned into this myth of the microchip. So that's just an example of how words and intent are being twisted. And some of the primary ones, that's a good one, the DNA one. The most damaging one is really pushing out the idea that these vaccines have been developed so quickly that we can't know if they're safe. And it's new technology with no testing. Well, the technology for mRNA vaccines, not only is it really exciting, but they've been working on it for 30 years. And we also have to remember that those of us in the pandemic planning field for many years, have been saying, there's going to be a coronavirus coming. Check out MERS. Check out that. We've been talking about coronaviruses for a really long time. And those really smart people who develop vaccines, of whom I'm not one, have been saying, well, let's figure out how we could develop a vaccine for a coronavirus. Now, they were looking at other coronaviruses. Remember, SARS-1 was also a coronavirus. So the work to develop a coronavirus vaccine, something in that big family of viruses, has been going on for many, many years. And yes, once we knew what this particular coronavirus was going to be like, at least generally, that's when the big push to very quickly develop something to approach this. But I just want to emphasize that the technologies and the research that went into this vaccine have actually been going on for years. And I think that's really important. The fertility myth.
Not to emphasize that once that particular application of this well-established technology was created, although it went rapidly, clinical tests were extensive and done with tens of thousands of people. So there simply is no truth to the apprehension that these vaccines are essentially being experimentally used on people who are getting vaccinated now because they were not adequately tested. They were adequately tested, and the researchers and doctors that we rely on to take care of us assure us that they are not playing fast and loose with the public's well-being.
Not at all. There has been so much work gone into this. And the other thing is, if you look up, 95% of physicians, when offered the vaccine, have accepted it and taken it. I mean, that itself is a pretty, you know, should be a pretty good sign that if my doctor's going to take it himself or herself, then they trust in that. And we've given it to so many people now with so few. The only adverse effects that we've seen with the mRNA vaccines have been a couple of people have had a severe allergic reaction, and those have been immediately dealt with, and there have been no long-term outcomes out of that. So I think it's really important that we recognize that. And you did mention that fertility myth. I'm not sure the origins of that. There have been several articles tracing and quite a bit of research, including from our National Security Administration, tracing the origins of many of the myths around Western vaccines. One of my favorite is the vaccine that was developed in Oxford, England, will turn you into a monkey. But many of these myths have actually been traced to Russian troll farms that have been purposefully putting that information out there on the internet. So my advice to anyone who sees or hears something really scary about a vaccine, like you're going to become a monkey, you're never going to be able to have babies, you're going to grow three extra warts on your nose, do your research. Don't just take that at face value, especially if you see it on social media. The social media places where the trolls like to lurk and hang out. So if you see something that makes you get an emotional reaction, oh my God, this is terrifying. Oh, it's so horrible. Stop, go to Snopes.com, go to a reliable source and look it up. Just do a Google search and find out what mainstream media, what other places are saying about that. So you can be, you've got to be, in today's world, you must be the critical thinker that says, I'm going to stop before I share, and I'm not going to be part of the misinformation campaign.
And people might do well to ask their own doctor whom they trust as well for an opinion.
Absolutely.
So, Dr. Dupre, before we leave this focus on vaccination, you've mentioned the concept of strategic vaccination, that in addition to deciding who should get vaccinated first because some people are more vulnerable than others, for example, very elderly, frail people with pre-existing health conditions, it may be more effective in terms of slowing the spread of the virus to vaccinate some people than to vaccinate others. Can you speak to us about strategic vaccination?
Absolutely. And I'll preface this by saying that we're looking probably at about 85% of the population vaccinated for us to really, really stop this and not be. So that's our ultimate goal. However, right now, the question is, who do we vaccinate first, right? And the state has developed guidelines on that that have been developed with federal input. But where we're at right now, because we have flexibility to vaccinate anybody 16 and over as a community and as everyone, we need to prioritize vaccinating the people who see more people. The numbers, and Ken's the numbers guy here, so I'm going to try. But the researchers from RAND Corporation have estimated that we could really crush this thing if we vaccinate just 15% of the people with the highest number of contacts. So someone who sees 200 people a day, that might be your grocery store clerk. That might be my brother, who's a music teacher in a school in New York and sees almost 300 kids every day. They're going to be 40,000 times more likely to spread the disease with one than a person who has one contact per day. So that means that if we can get those people vaccinated, we are more likely to slow the spread of the disease and hold on to it so that we can buy ourselves time to vaccinate the rest of the population to get up to that true herd immunity idea. And that also leans into one of the things that we've been talking about a lot, and I'm very glad to finally hear this become a mainstream concept, inequities, inequities in vaccination. If we look at the number of whites, of affluents who've been vaccinated in our state and in our country, it's much higher than the people who are out there on the front lines doing the work to keep the groceries on the shelves and to allow us to go to Walmart and buy things, who tend to be people of color and tend to be people of lower socioeconomic status. Because if you work at as many of those places, you're not making huge salaries. So those people have been last in line. When really, to stop this thing for all of us, we need to get them first. So using the strategic approach is not only effective in slowing coronavirus from spreading in our communities and helping all of us, it's also the most morally ethical approach that we can take to really providing people with the highest number of contacts the vaccine first.
And I'm hearing you say some things that I think might influence an individual's decision if the person is not yet clear about whether he or she should be vaccinated. If you're a person with a way of life, a job that brings you into contact with a lot of other people, you might realize that this is not only about you, that by vaccinating yourself, you may help to protect a lot of other people whom you might, without at all intending to do so, put at risk. Dr. Sexton, I think you wanted to add to this.
Yeah, this was interesting that this subject was brought up today, because just early this week, just a few days ago, Arizona, of all places, announced that they're working on a new ordinance or law. They're trying to find a way to make all frontline servers, and they're concentrating on restaurant workers, servers, to make it mandatory for them to get vaccinated in these restaurants. Because not only are they in contact with so many people, in a restaurant, you're often not wearing a mask, and you're probably not really distanced by 6 feet. So this is a high, high risk area. Now, Arizona is famous for having resisted all kinds of prevention measures. And the fact that they are now have enough backing to make this a mandatory law for restaurant workers, I think, kind of emphasizes the importance of this point that Dr. Dupre made.
Indeed. If you've just joined us, this is the Coronavirus Update interview of April 21, 2021, on KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, and we stream on the World Wide Web at gmcr.org. I'm Jamie Newton with Dr. Rene Dupre and Dr. Ken Sexton. We're exploring the coronavirus pandemic as it is now and as it may become, with recommendations for our community's responses to it. Let's continue from vaccination and the process, as we were just talking about, strategic vaccination based on potential encounters that a person might have with others because of her or his line of work or lifestyle. In the pandemic's early stages, the prevention messages emphasized washing our hands, avoiding contact with surfaces that might be contaminated. All that is still important, but it's recognized now that aerosol transmission is the major dynamic of infection. Dr. Sexton, aerosol transmission is your specialty. Tell us how that works and, practically speaking, what people can do to avoid being infected by what they inhale and also to avoid risk of infecting others unintentionally.
Aerosol transmission of airborne viruses, this is a method of transmission that's been known for some time. They know that's how the flu is often spread throughout school buildings. They've done experiments. They know this. Airborne viruses like the flu and the COVID, SARS-2 and SARS-1 virus, they're of the size, the same size as, let's say, cigarette smoke or incense smoke or wood smoke. And everybody knows that when somebody's smoking in an area, even outdoors, it travels quite a distance before it ever hits the ground. It can literally travel hundreds and hundreds of yards before it ever impacts a surface. So indoors, if you're exhaling, if you're infected, if an infected person indoors is exhaling, just normal exhaling, they will exhale viruses from their body. This will move through the entire building. And if there's not adequate ventilation, this virus load will continue to increase inside a building, depending on how good or how bad the ventilation is and how many people are indoors that are infected. Back in the winter, it was estimated that roughly 2% of our population was sent home once they were designated or identified as being positive for the virus and did not require hospitalization. They were sent home to recover. It was roughly 2% of our population in our county. And we suspect that a certain number of these folks were shopping in stores. Also, there's the asymptomatic. Those are the people that are infected and don't even know it themselves. They're not showing symptoms and they're still spreading the virus. They may have a strong immune system. They may not show symptoms, but they can still infect others. And if they infect others that have a, you know, less strong immune system, they can become more seriously sick. So the virus moves through the air, and the easiest way to control indoor air virus transmission is to make sure that the building is adequately ventilated. There's different ways to accomplish this. You know, you can open doors and windows. Schools are required to have a minimal amount of ventilation, and if they follow the code, they'll be good. One of the ways that you can check whether you have adequate ventilation is to carry a portable carbon dioxide monitor. As you exhale, of course, you're exhaling carbon dioxide as well as any viruses you may be carrying. So if there's inadequate ventilation indoors, a CO2 monitor would show the concentration increase dramatically, especially if it's a crowded building or a crowded space. If you carry this and this small device and it's relatively inexpensive, you'll know right away that there's not enough ventilation and you should at least leave. This is required of all public schools, by the way. There is a minimal amount of carbon dioxide that's allowed to accumulate in a space. So the other thing you can do to minimize the transmission of these potential, you know, airborne viruses, if you go into a space that looks crowded, just turn around and avoid it. Don't even take the chance, because besides the ventilation, now you have increased chances of coming close to another person. And even with adequate ventilation, if you get too close to a person for too long, it can cause indoor transmission.
Dr. Dupre, I'd like to take you back to something you've mentioned several times on this program, your Swiss cheese metaphor, where each layer of the Swiss cheese is a different coronavirus safety practice. Could you just talk to us about the importance, along with vaccination, of maintaining comprehensive approaches to prevention of infection that we've learned to use in the past, not letting our guard down. Particularly, we know that the spread of the coronavirus is now at record levels, even compared to what it's been before. We're seeing that in the United States as well. And there are some places, including a couple of our neighboring states, where that is very severe. So a reminder, if you will, please, of the array of coronavirus safe practices that can supplement the protection we get with vaccination.
Sure. And, you know, I mentioned the Swiss cheese model almost every time we've spoken. So I'll mention it again because I really like it and I don't take credit for it. It came out of some virologist in Australia who has been working on infectious diseases for many, many years. And the basic idea is that everything that we do, every intervention that we do, both as individuals and as a society, provides us with one layer of protection. But one layer of protection is like a slice of Swiss cheese. So everything has holes in it. So that's why as individuals, we're being asked to take those precautions like masking, distancing, not getting too close, not gathering indoors. So we're asking every individual to step up to be part of the solution. And then there are the societal things like Dr. Sexton was just speaking about, regulations for air quality in schools, setting up isolation and quarantine centers and supports, which is a societal challenge. It's something that we are learning more and more is essential, especially, and this seems backwards, but especially as our rates of COVID go down, is even more important that when we do have those little hotspots, you think of a wildfire, that we can go in and we can stop the little hotspots so we don't get it spreading and get it back to a raging, crowning forest fire, which is what is going on in India right now, or even Michigan. So that's another piece where it's a governmental intervention. But again, back to every different slice of Swiss cheese. And one of the things that does concern me sometimes as we are talking about vaccines and putting a tremendous amount of emphasis rightly on vaccines is that we seem to be treating the vaccines not like a slice of Swiss cheese, but like a brick of Parmesan, you know, that we just can't get through. And they're not. And I'm going to switch metaphors here for a minute to use a metaphor from another really renowned and effective infectious diseases specialist, and that's Dr. Michael Osterholm. He likens the vaccine to a Nomex wildland firefighting suit. And, you know, if you've got that Nomex suit, I don't know how many listeners have ever worn one, I have, and they do afford you some protection. So, you know, if you brush up against a flame, you're not going to catch on fire. You've got some protection. But I certainly would not walk into the middle of a raging wildfire wearing one of those and expect to come out unscathed. Likewise, we can be vaccinated and we can put on our Nomex suit. And remember, it takes us 6 weeks to, or more, just very slowly zip up that suit for our immune system until we get it zipped all the way up to the top. And so we can look at it just like, you know, back to, it's at wildland firefighting, it affords us some protection, but it's not the only solution. So switching metaphors back again to Swiss cheese, it is still a slice of Swiss cheese. And so I think that's a really important thing for us to remember. We need to get people vaccinated as essential, and we need to continue masking. We need to continue providing all of the, taking all of the other safety steps and public health measures that we know are still important.
And so I think we might just remind people that a lot of these things now that may have been difficult to remember initially have become routine for us. So when my wife and I come out of a grocery store, we open the car door. In the pocket of the car door, we have a bottle of hand sanitizer, and we immediately sanitize our hands. When we step out of the car, if we haven't been wearing a mask because we haven't been at another store, the mask goes on before we walk more than a step or two. We wash our hands a lot. All of these things we can do calmly and almost without having to think about them anymore. And they supplement the protection that we get and we give by being vaccinated. We're near the end of our time. Let me just ask if either of you has something that you would like people especially to keep in mind as something anyone can do to help us return as quickly as we can, though it may take several years to get back to what we once took for granted as a normal life. Dr. Dupre, anything else to add?
I would say that, you know, we need to stay the course, and we need to think about our own individual actions, just like I'm just full of metaphors today, like driving a car. So public health orders may come and go. We may reopen, we may not. Many of those decisions are driven by politics, by economics, and we need to be 100% sure that we take the steps that we need to drive our cars safely. And we may not be able to go 75 miles an hour on the highway right now because it's kind of like driving down the highway in the fog. And so we need to slow it down and know that if we slow down and go safely, we will eventually get to our destination and the fog will lift. But we need to slow down, not go back to the parties, not go back to the ways that we have been doing. Not yet. Hang in there. Get vaccinated. Encourage someone you know to get vaccinated. Take your precautions, and we will get there.
Self-reliance. We don't need law enforcement to tell us that when we can't see because it's too dusty or too foggy, we should stop driving. We don't need somebody to say, wear your mask, sweetheart, when you go into public, because we know that. We know to wash our hands. Dr. Sexton, anything to add in a minute or so?
Yeah. One thing I would like to make sure that everybody's aware of, with the UK variant being the most prominent virus now, while in the past, young people were considered to be somewhat, you know, have some natural protection against the earlier variant, they were always one of the highest infected populations, the younger folks. The new UK variant can dramatically impact negatively the health of young people. And so they're going to continue to get infected from the practices they've, experienced before. They have to be aware now that they're not bulletproof now. They can get sick. And this is what's happening in Michigan. There's been a lot of outbreaks in the schools, and more and more cases are showing up in the hospitals of young people. So it's good for everybody to remind our younger population that they need to continue to practice all the prevention techniques that, you know, we're all following. And it's to their benefit, not only to continue, you know, to minimize the transmission of disease, but to keep them out of the hospitals. And they're an important part of our workforce, the younger folks, and we need them, and we need to keep them healthy.
Thank you so much for that. You've been listening to the Coronavirus Update interview of April 21st, 2021. My guests have been public health consultant Dr. Rene Dupre and environmental scientist Dr. Ken Sexton. Thank you both for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
This interview will be posted for listening and downloading at your convenience on the Coronavirus Update page of our website, gmcr.org. And also on the comprehensive resource website, GrantCountyCoronavirusUpdate.org, a collaboration of a group of community organizations in Grant County. Please feel welcome to send that link by email or using your smart device to your friends and encourage them to hear these interviews. Thanks, as always, to Marcus Hansen, our station manager, audio engineer, and producer of Coronavirus Update. And thank you for listening and for supporting GMCR and KURU. Be safe and be well. For Gila Mimbres, Community Radio and KURU 89.1 FM in Silver City, New Mexico, I'm Jamie Newton.